Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Badger State, a Wisconsin history podcast, where we will look at people, places, and events throughout Wisconsin history. As always, I'm your host, Peter Lanning, and this is Season 2, Episode 4, Mildred Harnack, Resistance Fighter. For this episode, I thought I would delve into the life and times of Mrs. Mildred Harnack, a Milwaukee native, graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and member of the anti-Nazi resistance group called the Red Orchestra. During the Second World War, Mildred and her husband Arvid provided information to the armies of both the United States and the Soviet Union. Unfortunately, the Gestapo would eventually catch on to her activities, and both Mildred and Arvid would be executed for espionage, with Mildred becoming the only American woman to be executed by direct order of Adolf Hitler himself. Hello, everybody. This is your host, Peter Lanning, and as I said, we will be discussing Mrs. Mildred Harnack for our episode today. But before we jump into that, I want to introduce a new co-host to the show, who is my oldest friend and also my favorite older sister, Maria Flugrat. Maggie, hello. Happy to have you on the show with me.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I wanted to have you on here for so long, believe it or not. Can you believe that?
Yes, I can.
I want to get all the siblings on here at some point. Mm-hmm. But, so before we jump into Mildred Harnack's story, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Just so everybody knows more about you. I talk you up all the time. I just want them to hear, have them hear from your mouth.
Okay, sure. Well, like you were saying earlier, yes, I am your older sister. and I graduated from Marion University in Fond du Lac 2 years ago, about in 2018. I live in Milwaukee.
Yep.
And I just got married in October, so.
Yeah, oh, that was such a fun day, too. So, yeah. So, as she said, she went to Marion, which is where I went. She's kind of the reason I went there, too. But we're here to talk about Mildred Harnack. So I know I kind of threw you into this episode, but Mildred Harnack is this woman from Milwaukee. Yep, that's her. That's a photo of her. I think I've shared that photo. And I think before we can really go into what her story is, I should talk a little bit about the culture she was born into.
Okay.
So as you know, and I think as a lot of other people know, Milwaukee is located at this place where three rivers flow into what is known as Milwaukee Bay. So these rivers are the Milwaukee, the Menominee, and the Kinnickinnick, which is really fun to say. I like saying Kinnickinnick.
Me too.
Right. So by 1900, Milwaukee was beginning to be formed, or defined rather, by a bunch of different things. Among these are Germans. Of course. And a lot of these Germans had fled from the revolutions in Europe in 1848. So they would come to the United States and they eventually made their way to Milwaukee, which I don't find all that surprising. The next thing is beer. And of course, Milwaukee is still defined by beer very, very much.
Yes.
Yeah. And the last thing, and I don't really find this as strange as some people might, but Milwaukee was defined by socialism. So yeah, during the first half of the 20th century, Milwaukee elected three socialist mayors.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so the first one was in 1910. That's a gentleman by the name of Emil Seidel. And before I really go into that, I really don't know any of their specific policies. I just know they were elected. And Milwaukee was really the only major American city to have elected socialist mayors.
Okay.
Yeah, so Emil Seidel was the first one elected in 1910. The second one was Daniel Hone. And I think he was the longest continuous socialist administrator in the U.S. Yeah, there he is right there. So Daniel Hone was mayor of Milwaukee from 1916... 1st of January until 1940. 24 years as mayor of Milwaukee. And then the third one, I have him written around here somewhere. His name is Frank Ziedler. I'm probably not pronouncing that right. My German's not all that strong, even though we both speak a little bit of German.
Yeah.
But he was mayor of Milwaukee from 1948 to 1960, being the second longest socialist administrator in the city of Milwaukee. Okay. So that's the city that Mildred Harnack was born into, right?
Mm-hmm.
She was born on the 16th of September, 1902, to her mother's name was Georgina, and I think her father's name was William C. Fish. So her original last name is not Harnack. That is her married name. Her maiden name is Fish, so she was Mildred Fish. Or to her friends and family, she was known as Millie, which I think is kind of a cute little name.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah.
So she was born in 1902, and she was the youngest child. I think there were about six children. I'm almost positive. There were six children. Mm-hmm. So her family kind of moved around a lot, too. But when she was first born, they lived in Milwaukee around the area that's known as, I think it's called Sauerkraut Avenue. It's kind of this high concentration of German-speaking people, the rich Germans, I think. The Usingers live there. They're known for sausage. Right? Usinger? Mm-hmm. Usinger sausage. Kemps, I think they live there too. And a few other ones, I don't remember the names again, and I apologize for that.
The Millers?
They could have. Of course, they would have lived in Milwaukee, but I don't think they were German. Okay. Now, the interesting thing for the Fish family, Mildred and her family, is that they weren't German, but they lived in this area where these German people lived.
Okay.
Which is kind of cool. And, of course, the school she went to, I'm going to try to find its name while we are sitting here. And while I'm looking for it, I want to encourage you guys to look up this documentary from Milwaukee Public Television. I think it's called Wisconsin's Nazi Resistance. It kind of tells this story in more detail. So Mildred Fish, let me find my reliable source. She went to school in Milwaukee, of course. And then I will see if I can find her school later. I know her senior year, her family moved out to Washington, D.C. So she did her senior year there. But then she was really missing, like, her friends. And she was feeling extremely homesick for her home state of Wisconsin. So then she ended up going to college, or starting her college career, at UW-Madison.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And while she was there, she's kind of known, or she got this reputation as being the most beautiful girl on campus. She had this, like, lovely blonde hair, and she made a whole bunch of friends there, too. And actually, UW-Madison is where she met her future husband, a man named Arvid Harnack.
Okay.
So that's where Harnack comes in, of course.
That makes sense. And,
yeah. So they met at Madison. As there's a kind of a legend that goes behind it, and I found this a couple times doing research, that, well, okay, so back up a second. Arvid Harnack was a Rockefeller scholar. He wasn't an American. He was from Germany. And I think at UW-Madison, he was working on one of his PhDs. I think by the end of his life, he had at least two and was working on a third one. By the time he was executed in 1942, he had, like, almost three PhDs. So this man was truly a scholar. But as the story goes, how they met, he was there after she graduated. She was teaching, because she stayed on to teach, I think it was, like, American literature or something. And he was supposed to go to one building because he was on a fellowship. And what that means is that he's being paid to teach while he's doing his studies at UW-Madison. So, as I keep getting sidetracked here, the story goes that he was supposed to go to one building on the campus, and he ended up going to the wrong building, and stumbled into this classroom where he saw this beautiful woman lecturing. So he decided to stay there because, of course, it was kind of awkward.
Yeah.
And so he went up later and introduced himself and apologized for kind of his faltering English because, of course, he's German. And she apologized for not speaking very good German. So that's kind of where that whole story began. So then I think their first date, from the little bit I've been able to research through the Wisconsin Historical Society, a bunch of other websites. I think I have some stuff from the UW-Madison website, too. Their first date was canoeing on Lake Mendota.
Oh, my
which
gosh.
If I had that for a first date, it'd be all over. I'd propose marriage, too, right there. But, yeah. So, that's where they started dating. And he kind of asked that she teach him better English, and he would teach her German in return. So, yeah, okay. This is kind of... There's a bunch of letters. I think I found them here. There's a couple of letters that he wrote back to his family. I know they are here somewhere. I'm going to cover some of this other stuff here later. This is all the execution history. Here we go. So, sometime during the spring of 1926, this is when they first met, he wrote this letter back to his family in Germany. And I got this from a news website of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. So, spring or summer of 1926, he writes, quote, spent a day of brilliant sunshine on Lake Mendota. Lots of flowers under the green trees and exotic, wonderful birds. On another Sunday, we went to Devil's Lake. It's a crystal clear lake between two high cliffs. We laid down on the highest point and looked down and across the wide countryside. The cliffs here are an exception. The rest of Wisconsin is fairly level and flat, which is true. I read Faust with Mildred. Mildred seems to have a feel for languages because she learned enough Greek writing a few months to be able to read Homer fairly quickly. So I think that's kind of interesting too, because as I watched this documentary on her from PBS,
all right,
the fact that somebody could memorize the entire first book of Homer's Iliad in Greek.
Oh my, like, lord.
Yeah. That is fascinating. If yes. I could meet anybody, man or woman, who could do that, that would be so cool.
Mm-hmm.
I would be jealous of them. That'd be something I would really want to do. Right. And then later in that summer, same summer, he wrote. So they were courting for very long.
Okay.
And he writes on June 8th of 1926, I am very happy. I've got engaged. The whole thing is actually very curious because I can hardly speak English, and Mildred knows no German. I made up my mind when I saw her for the second time. We got engaged yesterday. Yesterday being June 7th of 1926.
Okay.
So they kind of fell in love really, really quickly. It's kind of like you and your husband.
Well, yeah. Kind of.
Yeah.
Although we dated for longer than a month.
yeah, this apparently Mildred and Arvid want to play this out like a Disney movie before so. Disney movies were even a thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So then let's fast forward 2 months.
But Mickey Mouse was around almost.
Oh yeah, almost. Almost 2 years later. Then we're gonna skip forward to August 8th of 1926, and this letter reads, quote, Mildred and I were married yesterday. So that means that they took 2 months to prepare their wedding, and it went off without a hitch.
Yes.
That's so cool. And then he continues saying, Mildred passed her master's degree exam 2 days before. So she's a really educated woman, too.
Mm-hmm.
She is now a Bachelor of Arts and Master of Arts. We celebrated the wedding on her brother's farm, which I forget where it is. I think it's like near Brookfield. I think it was, but now we know that's like city.
Yeah.
Now. Because it's not where our grandma lived.
Yes, and where our aunt lives, too.
Yeah, And then he finishes, let's see, saying a large part of the fish family was gathered there. So lots of her family was there. And then he says, Mildred's mother is simple and yet very fine. So he's being complimentary.
Yeah.
Very nice. We arrived at the farm at 5 p, which I think means 5 p.m. And Mildred and I left at 9 p.m. So it didn't take that long. It's not like the weddings we see today where it's a huge affair and it's all day long.
That was certainly my wedding.
Yeah. We were married on the farm by Father Johnston from the Methodist Episcopal Church, and he made it short and painless. I'm not sure what would be painful about the wedding is...
I don't know. I've never been to a Methodist ceremony.
Me neither. I've only been to... I think your wedding's the only wedding I've ever been to, honestly.
No, you might have been to our cousins.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
We were little.
I retract that statement. I just don't remember that.
That's okay.
And so this great love story began. Isn't this wonderful?
Yes.
So Mildred, being this wonderful, independent woman that she was, hyphenated her name, which I think for some people was... it says it was a bold move at that time. That's the note I have taken down.
Okay.
Because she became Mildred Fish Harnack. Because she was, from what I can tell, she was very proud of who she was. Right. And from there, I think they spent a little bit more time in the States. They traveled to Europe a lot. And this is where she met... she met her friend, Clara Leiser at UW-Madison. I'm going to talk more about her later as well.
Okay.
But they moved to Germany in 1929, because that's where his family's from. And, of course, he's got, like, these three, or almost three, doctoral degrees. Okay. So he's working for the government. She ends up getting a teaching position. I think it's at Berlin University, something like that. It's some university... in or around Berlin, and she was the first woman to hold this position, and other members of the of the faculty included one Albert Einstein.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so unfortunately, her teaching position there didn't last very long, because the Nazis took power in 1933.
Okay.
And I think a thing I want people to understand is that, like, there's a common belief that Hitler and the Nazis seized power, but really they didn't. They were voted into power, and then they just took it from there once they had all their power.
Then they took over after that.
So she was fired
okay.
from the teaching position. Of course, Albert Einstein had to flee the country because he was Jewish, but she was fired mostly because she was a woman.
Okay.
She was a foreigner. And she wasn't Nazi enough.
Oh, she
was for
wasn't...
the German government, for the Nazi government.
Okay. I was going to say, in this picture, she doesn't even look Aryan, so not blonde or blue eyes or anything.
I'm sure that could just be, like, the picture.
Okay.
Because she is described as having this wonderful blonde hair.
Okay.
Which...
yeah, it's probably
and
the picture.
And a couple of the pictures I've
pictures
seen...
pictures were black and white.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so this is another picture, too. I'm going to save this, and I will post this.
Okay.
Soon, this is... this photo that you'll see in a little bit is Mildred and her husband, Arvid, and they look like a happy couple, probably in Germany. I'm just going to save that. I will post that as well. But... throughout the next couple of years, they did work in Germany. They didn't do too much. She did become a bit more radical. Both Arvid and Mildred ended up going on tours of the Soviet Union.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because they became very interested in that method of government. I don't remember what it was called in this thing I read, because I had it and then I lost it. But... Arvid was, one of his theses that he was working on was based very much on the Soviet Union's type of government, which we know is communist.
Yes.
But there was more behind it than just it's communist. So that's kind of cool too.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, so during this next couple of years before the war starts... Mildred and Arvid became, well, they didn't like the Nazis, right?
Correct, yeah.
But they had contacts in the American government and in the Soviet government. But as much as they didn't agree with the Nazis' policies or how they were running the country, they both became members of the Nazi Party, having to sign documents that included the words Heil Hitler on them.
Okay.
I think to disguise the fact that they didn't like the Germans.
Okay.
So they officially joined the Nazi Party, but they were working against it.
At the same time.
Yeah. So Arvid became, her husband, was working for the economic ministry, I think, of Germany. And that's kind of why, he was an economist.
Okay.
Which is why he was working on his thesis based on the Soviet type of government.
Okay.
Here we go. Arvid also studied law at the University of Berlin.
Okay.
Yeah. So, let's see. By 1937, there's the quote I'm looking for. Mildred had to explain her involvement in the resistance.
Okay.
To her family. So some of us have to stay to work from the inside. That is a direct quote from Mildred to her family back in the States. So that's really cool. Anyway, with the assistance of the Soviet Union, Mildred and Arvid created this underground resistance group that had more than 600 members.
Ooh, wow.
So that's kind of big, if you think about it, for a resistance group within Nazi Germany. But yeah, they were all working to overthrow the Nazi Party, but they did care for Germany. So we can't go saying that they hated Germany. They just hated the Nazis, which is very fair, and we should all hate Nazis anyway.
Yes.
So, there were other people involved, too, with this group. This group is called the Red Orchestra, or the Rote Kapelle, which means Red Chapel in German. I think there was, like, a mistranslation or something. So, they call it Red, of course, because it's associated with the Soviets, who are communist.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite sure I understood when they said it was called Kapelle, which, chapel, but I think the members were, like, named for various instruments.
Okay.
So I think that makes more sense to call it the Red Orchestra. And there are plenty of books
about it
written on this. Well, I'm not sure there's, a huge stack somewhere. Like, there's not, like, whole shelves dedicated to them. But there are a bunch of books that I could find dedicated to the Harnack and the Red Orchestra, as it was nicknamed by the Gestapo. Let's see, the another man that was involved with this group, the Red Orchestra, is this Lieutenant Harald Schulze-Boysen, who was a friend of the Harnacks in Berlin, and he worked kind of tirelessly too, excuse me, and he was a member of Hermann Goering's staff, so one of the most notorious Nazis. He's working right on his staff.
Okay.
And working against him right under his nose. Imagine getting to do that.
I know. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, let's see. There's a bunch of other things too. I don't think I really have to explain this or go too much into this, but unfortunately, the Nazis would catch up to them, right? As bad as they were, they really weren't that stupid. Well, Hitler is arguably very stupid. We can get into that at a different time.
Yeah.
But the entire organization as a whole was intelligent. So naturally, the Gestapo caught up with them due to a slip-up from the Soviet Union, who, I think they made a radio transmission, and
the Gestapo decoded it?
They did decode it, but the Soviet operator on the Soviet end used these people's actual names in the transmission.
So they're
like, oh, okay, these are the people working against us. Now we know who they are. We know already know where they live because they, you know, they're members of the Nazi party. We can just go and get them now.
Okay.
So, yeah, this all happened in 1942.
Okay.
And there was a four-month trial, and 47 members of the Red Orchestra were put to death.
That's sad.
It was kind of interesting, though, for Mildred and Arvid. So Arvid was executed first. And it was just before Christmas Eve. I think it's December 22nd of that year. I've seen conflicting sources, some saying the 22nd, some saying the 24th. But he was executed using what is known as a foot-long rope, mm-hmm. which I think, as the name implies, is a very short rope, which, as from research, has told me that it using such a short rope is meant to ensure that the strangulation is slow, very slow, and excruciating. Yeah, yeah. The look you have on your face is exactly what I thought when I read that. But where it gets interesting is that Mildred was originally sentenced to like a few months of hard labor at a concentration camp. She was housed separately from her husband during all of this.
Okay.
And I think she was at Charlottenburg, which is also in Berlin. But Hitler decided that he wanted to make an example out of her. Wanted there to be like no martyr, no, you know, of course, all these other people, these other 40 or so people that were killed, they're martyrs, but Hitler wanted to make an example out of her. So he ordered the courts, I think through the Reich military tribunal, to set up a new trial against her. So like having double jeopardy, trying her again for her crime, and this time ordered the Gestapo, the Reich's military tribunal, to find her guilty once again, but put her to death this time.
Oh my.
And so she was. And I wrote a little bit. I have that whole thing written here. That's near the top of this. So on Tuesday, February 16th of 1943, this is at Plötzensee prison. I'm sorry, I think I said Charlottenburg earlier. 5:59 or so. Mildred Fish Harnack, a native Milwaukeean and graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, is upon the execution block. Her final words, as recorded to history, are "Ich habe Deutschland auch so geliebt." And in English, that line translates to "And I have loved Germany so much." Think about that.
Yeah.
Right, because her husband's family accepted her in Germany when they moved there in 1929. She fell in love with this country. She learned German. She, I think at the University of Berlin or wherever she had that teaching position, she taught modern American literature.
Okay.
And so saying that she has loved Germany so much, looking at all that she's done throughout her life, it's heartbreaking. Right?
Right.
And then, unfortunately, the clock strikes six. The blade of the guillotine falls. And for Mildred Fish Harnack, the world goes black. As I was looking at this, I started tearing up.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to think that I can hold myself together pretty well. But when it involves stuff like this, I just can't do it. I really can't. I'm almost feel like tearing up now, honestly. It's really, it's disturbing what happened. And it gets more disturbing. And it's kind of a content warning, so I'll put that out there. After being beheaded, after having her head sliced off with a guillotine by direct order of Hitler himself,
mm-hmm.
They took her body, her decapitated torso, and they hung it on a meat hook. Like what you would see in a butcher's shop.
Okay, right.
Yeah, and I don't remember the doctor's name, and I feel really bad about that. He did experiments and stuff on her body to kind of find out what the effects of stress are on, like, menstruation. So he dissected, like, her uterus and her ovaries to see what being held in a Gestapo prison would do to a woman.
Did he find anything?
I did not find any information telling me what he found, and I'm really glad, because I think to discuss some of that information would dishonor her further.
Yeah.
Then exactly. What the Nazis did to her after she was beheaded.
Yeah, that's awful.
Yeah. Let me see. I'm gonna see if I can find the other source I had. Because there was some. It was a really sad kind of thing. After this doctor was done performing the tests and experiments.
Gotcha.
A friend of hers. I don't remember her name either. And again, I feel really bad. If I can find it again, I'll talk it. Maybe add an appendix episode. Maybe a mini-sode explaining things that I've forgotten.
Yeah.
She had her body identified. Her friend identified her body. Sorry. And the rest of her body, like, without her head,
mm-hmm.
was, like, brought back or taken away from this prison, from this hospital, wherever they're doing these tests, in, like, grocery bags.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's very yikes. I started looking at that, too, and I almost got sick. I did.
Mm-hmm.
It is the worst thing that I think could happen to a person. Oh, just to think about it. It's disgusting.
It is, yeah.
It is.
Especially those experiments and...
Oh. Yeah, like... I mean, there's donating your body to science, which I think is okay.
But I mean, if it's not for science...
If you're going to execute somebody and then dishonor their memory further by doing such things to them...
Yeah.
It's wrong.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah. So, her body was brought back. I think she is one of the only members of the Red Orchestra whose gravesite is actually known. Because, as was typical with the Nazis, as we see through the concentration camps, bodies were usually thrown in mass graves.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But there's so many other things to consider here. This story, it just really makes me sad. I know I keep saying that, but I'm surprised I didn't hear about this woman. I only found out about her story a few weeks before we're sitting here recording.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a big part of that. So, she was executed, as now we know. And
mm-hmm.
I was wondering, after I first read part of her story, why is she not remembered better here in the States?
Yeah, especially in Wisconsin.
Right, right. And actually, I think it's starting in 1947. There were attempts to, like, honor her memory.
Mm-hmm.
But there was another famous Wisconsinite who kind of prevented that from happening during the next decade or so.
Houdini?
No. Houdini was dead by this point.
That's right.
That's right. That's okay. No, this one is also not a very good person. I do not like him. And this famous Wisconsinite comes to us in the form of Senator Joseph McCarthy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because so the Red Scares during the 1950s. And this has kind of helped along, too, because after the war, actually right after her death, the Soviets used her and her husband as, like, propaganda. Like, because they had these
ties to the Red Orchestra. They were kind of labeled as these staunch communist supporters by the Soviet mm-hmm. Union. And since the average American did not support communism
correct.
Back during the 1950s, nobody wanted to remember her. So, but as I said, there was an attempt to have a monument for her in Milwaukee.
Okay.
Not Milwaukee, I'm sorry. In Madison. And yeah, it was kind of ignored because, again, by Senator McCarthy and anti-communism. But today, actually, only a couple of years ago, there was a monument dedicated to her and her husband in Madison. I think it's at Picnic Point, which is where they had their first canoe date mm-hmm. and where Arvid proposed marriage.
Okay, yeah.
So, yeah. Did I mention she got her PhD as well?
No, I knew she was studying for it, but you haven't
mentioned. Yeah, oh, I apologize for that. She got her PhD in literature from the University of Gießen. It's spelled Gissen.
Okay.
Yeah. So she did have a PhD as well. So her and her husband are these super educated people mm-hmm. that I think really should be remembered.
Okay. Yeah.
And there's a couple other things I forgot too. Yeah. So she went to the Milwaukee High School of the Arts.
Okay. What it's known as now.
Yeah. Correct. Okay. She went, it was back then when she was in high school, it was known as West Division High School.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the reason they moved to Maryland to begin with.
Yes.
Toward near D.C. was because her father died.
Oh, okay. And I'm guessing her mom wanted to move closer to family or something.
I'm assuming that's part of it. But, you know, despite being like this really like liberal, amazing woman.
Yeah.
She was also kind of known as a jock during her time in D.C. She played basketball and baseball. She did a bunch of writing for student newspapers. She played the role of Princess Angelica in William Makepeace Thackeray's The Rose and the Ring. Have you heard of that play?
I have. And I've read I've read a different book by him, Vanity Fair, but I've heard of the play too.
Yeah, yeah. And then she started her college career at George Washington University.
Okay.
In D.C. And that's where she became homesick and returned back to Madison.
To the UW, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then, yeah, she taught there and all that other fun stuff too. Quite a distinguished poet as well. Loved poetry. Some accounts say that during her last days, after her second trial, which I think truly shamed the name of justice,
yeah,
she sat in her cell translating poetry from German into English and vice versa.
Okay, yeah.
Which is probably Greek, too. If she can memorize Homer in Greek, she probably translated poetry, other poems.
Always.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah. Graduated in 1925, got her master's in 1926. It's fascinating. And I think I mentioned this poem earlier. I mentioned her friend Claire Elijah, who also went to UW-Madison.
Okay, yeah.
And she wrote this really powerful and moving poem called To and From the Guillotine, which she wrote after hearing or receiving final confirmation or official confirmation of Mildred's death at the hands of the Nazis. And originally I was going to include it or read through it as part of this episode. Mm-hmm. But then I saw the page length. So the poem is made up of 18 different parts. Right? And the transcript I found from the digital library of UW-Madison was 20 pages long. So I don't have it included in this episode, but I have recorded it already. It's been released
okay.
as minisode number 3. You'll be able to find it under the title of Claire Elijah's To and From the Guillotine. It's about 35 minutes long, and I really recommend you guys listen to that, because as I said, it is powerful and moving, and I almost didn't make it through reading that either. Because the descriptions of everything, there's like a lengthy section, I think two or three parts, describing the friend's time at UW-Madison. So
okay,
it
yeah.
mentions Lake Mendota and State Street, the UW campus. I think those are probably my favorite parts. But that is, excuse me, probably my favorite part of all of this is that poem. It's that's such a deep loss, like having a friend beheaded and her husband hanged.
Yeah, that
can inspire something so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I really hope everybody remembers Mildred's story, because it's been really forgotten and people don't talk about it.
And you know what, even when we were in high school at Marion, we never learned about her at all. Even and we had to take a Wisconsin history class to graduate too.
Yeah, I think you took it too in elementary school. We took it fourth yeah. grade, which includes taking a tour to the Wisconsin Capitol in Madison.
Yeah.
Which is a gorgeous building. I'll probably do a whole episode on that at some point. And then I took History of Wisconsin again.
Okay.
At Marion. And you know, I just found my notes for that class, which is kind of a side note. Oh. I thought I'd lost them forever. And I was like, where am I going to get episode ideas? And now I have that again. But moving on.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm really, really surprised that I have never heard of this woman. So much thanks to whoever posts on social media for the Wisconsin Historical Society for sharing like her story, or at least little tidbits of her story that I have now picked up on.
I agree. This was interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So now we've kind of reached the end, but Maggie, I want to thank you for appearing on this episode with me. This has been awesome. Maybe you can do more with me. Maybe we can cover some of your favorite topics too, because you're kind of a writer, and I yeah. think I've told some of my friends you've started a blog, right?
I have, yes.
Yeah.
Within the last the last month and a half or so.
Yeah. And we are super proud of you for that. I'm super proud of anybody trying to do anything creative, so.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. So I really hope we can do this again sometime.
Mm-hmm. Me too. That would be great.
Yeah. All right, everybody. That's the end of this particular episode. But remember to remember Mildred Fish Harnack's story. So that's the story of Mildred Fish Harnack. And I sincerely hope you will all remember her and her story. As a side note, this story is a great conversation starter, so go and try that out sometime with your friends and family. Who knows where that conversation will go? Also, if you'd like to keep following along on this journey of exploring Wisconsin history, you can find us on Facebook at Badger State of Wisconsin History Podcast, on Twitter at State Badger, and on Instagram at Badger State History. Two final notes, though. If you would be interested in supporting the show and helping to create more Wisconsin history content, you can find us on patreon.com/badgerstatehistory. The second note pertains to my sister, who was my co-host today, and I mentioned that she has a blog of her writings that she's done throughout college and will be writing more as life goes on. So her Facebook page is called Writings by Maria Flugrat. That's Maria, M-A-R-I-A. Flugrat, P-F-L-U-G-R-A-D-T, and on Twitter at @byflugrat. Again, Flugrat is P-F-L-U-G-R-A-D-T. All right, guys, thank you again so much for listening. And until next time, this is Peter Lanning with Badger State, over and out.